B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, hour number two here, Felger and Mads. Again, Mike out today, so Jim Murray alongside Matt McCarthy here to give us headlines. Chris Gasper was supposed to be here. Only Gasper Murray would say, I got to do 3 o'clock instead of 4 o'clock and then be late. Is that surprising to you?
No, I'm in the same boat, though. There's now traffic as we're starting to inch back to a new normal here. But there's been now some traffic here on Friday, so it was bound to happen. I'm not going to get on him too much for it.
And so, look, that's one of those kind of good news, bad news propositions, right? Good news, again, that the city is reopening, businesses are reopening, people probably headed down to the Cape for the weekend, all that sort of stuff. That's all good stuff. At the same time, Murray, I know how much you love traffic, because back when times were normal, you used to bitch about it every day you came into the station. It was one of the things I could set my watch by, Murray. In any case, I know that Chris Gasper will be in momentarily. When he does join us, we'll get to him immediately. And there was something in particular that was reported about the Patriots this week that sent Gasper into orbit. I'm going to try to avoid it until he gets here, because I think a lot of people were irritated by it. So 617-779-0985. It is agenda-free Friday. So anything and everything that you want to get to, we will do so, or we will get to over the course of the next few hours. Stanley is in Taunton on something that was a big story last week in the NFL. Go ahead, Stanley. Stanley, what do you got?
All right. So I was talking to a former employee at your job. We were talking about the other day about Drew Brees and how the fact, listen to this, I'm not,
you know what, Stanley, I'm gonna let you go because I don't like the way that's going. Murray, did you have a bad vibe about that call?
I was barely listening. If I'm being
okay. I did, Matt.
Yeah,
I did not feel good.
That just did not sound like it was gonna work well. Tom is in Newton. Tom, what do you got?
Yeah, hey guys, I just want to talk about Julian Edelman. I mean, I think that, you know, with Brady being gone this year, I mean, I think it's really just staggering the fact this guy's been on the team since 2009. I mean, other than, you know, Matt Slater, he's the highest tenured guy on the team. So I'm just kind of curious the relationship between Bill and Edelman, because we talk all the time about, you know, the relationship between, you know, Robert and Brady and Brady and Bill and all that. I feel like Edelman's got a big role to play this year, just helping lead the team in transition. What do you guys think?
So, Tom, look, I think Edelman is clearly a guy that's one of the most important guys on the roster. He may be the single most important guy on the offense. And that can sound crazy when you're obviously talking about football and the importance of the quarterback position, particularly for a team that just lost Tom Brady. But I think under the circumstances, Edelman's got the best track record of anybody on the offense, or certainly the longest history of anybody on the offense. Now, the only other guy I think I'd put in the conversation there is, and I'm talking about the skill people, is James White. To me, White and Edelman now are huge. They're the only sure things, assuming health, that you are going to get on the Patriots offense this year. Everything else, I think, comes with a bit of a question, whether it be because of injury, like David Andrews, or you know, and even I would put Isaiah Wynn in that category as well. If you want to talk linemen, I think Tooney has been consistent, so you should probably feel pretty good about him. But the two guys on the right side, Mason and Marcus Cannon, have not been good. The tight ends come with a huge question mark. The rookie receivers come with a huge question mark. So I know we touched on this earlier in the week, but McCarthy, do you think there is any guy that is more important on the roster than Julian Edelman?
I don't think so, Maz. I think he actually is, at least on the offensive side of the ball, I think he's the most important player the Patriots have this year, because if you're turning over the reins to Jarrett Stidham, that gives him kind of a security blanket, a safety blanket, a guy who's been there, done that, knows the offense, all of those things, and has been one of the best receivers in the NFL for the last 4 or 5 years. Like, that can only help a, you know, essentially a rookie quarterback, a second-year quarterback. So I think Edelman's presence and his role in this offense and on this team this year will be absolutely massive. I don't think you can understate it. I think he's the most important player on that offense.
So the caller, I thought, asked an interesting question right at the beginning that is not something we've spent time on, and I suppose it would be purely speculative at this point, but far be it from us to stop at the point of speculation and not go over that line. So let me ask you, Murray, when the caller says, look, we talk about a lot of things, about the way Edelman feels about Stidham, about the way Brady feels about the receivers, about the relationship between Brady and Belichick. How do you think Belichick feels about Edelman?
I think it's going to be a wait and see for him, right? Because, you know, when Tom Brady first went to Tampa, it was, you know, Edelman all up on his social media with the likes of the sausage emojis and everything else. And then he seemingly got on board, at least as far as Instagram is concerned, weeks later when it was, you know, LFG and let's go and all this kind of other stuff. And it's him in a Patriots uniform looking like he's on board. But it still remains to be seen, right? Like, I'd like to think deep down, considering how long he's been here and what he's helped turn him into. Again, he was a quarterback in the seventh round when he drafted him in 2009, that he'll be on board. But I don't know. If I'm Belichick, I think that's fair to think that, like, well, we'll see how on board he really is here, because he was kind of a bitch about everything when Brady went to Tampa.
Well, so I'll tell you why I think Bill Belichick feels pretty good about Edelman, because Edelman's still here. He's still here. So I think it's a fair question by the caller that we don't talk about the relationship there. I think the fact that Julian Edelman is still here tells you how Bill thinks about him. Bill thinks that Edelman will come out of it and Edelman will compete. He has confidence in Edelman's nature that he is going to be committed to Jarrett Stidham. He's going to be committed to the overall cause, and that he's not going to sit there and pout about Brady, because he thinks that at his core, Edelman's a competitor and he's a professional. So, I think that this is a significant thing. I generally think Belichick is right as it pertains to Edelman. I had my doubts, but after hearing Mike Giardi's report earlier in the week that, according to other players on the team, Edelman's got the red ass and he's out to disprove people, I think Belichick read the personality of his player correctly. I hope it's true. But I think one of Bill's strengths is that he really understands the nature and makeup of people, and certainly their state of mind at a particular point in time. And by that, I mean this. Rob Gronkowski, he wanted a trade 2 years ago. Bill was done with Gronk 2 years ago. And for whatever reason, he was stopped, whether it was Kraft or Gronk retiring. And I do think that Kraft intervened, or maybe Brady threw a hissy fit and said, you can't let him trade Gronk. And then Kraft intervened, whatever it was. But Bill wanted to cut bait with Gronk then. And I'm going to ask our producer, Jimmy Stewart, if he could pull up the Giardi comment from a couple of days ago where we asked Mike Giardi how Edelman felt about Stidham. And I think a couple of years ago, Edelman might have felt differently about a guy like Jarrett Stidham, because certainly Stidham isn't the first young quarterback the Patriots have brought in while Brady was still here. And in case you forget, we'll play it for you now. We asked Giardi what that relationship is like, Edelman and Stidham. How does Edelman feel about his new quarterback? Hey, Jimmy. Have you been able to get any sense, Mike, as to how Edelman feels about Stidham?
I think they're in a good place. I think that he is. I think it's interesting because I think when Jimmy was around, Julian wasn't necessarily, especially early on, arms wide open for Jimmy. And I think that's not the way that this has played out. I think he is much more, from what I can gather, he's been much more receptive to Stidham and what Stidham brings to the table. I think Edelman came around on Garoppolo, but I think at the beginning, you know, that was a shot across Brady's bow, and therefore Julian took it as a shot across his bow as well.
So now, one of the things we talked about the other day is that, again, when Garoppolo was here, Edelman was on the Brady side of it. But Murray, what happened when Garoppolo actually got onto the field and had to play in year three? How did Edelman play?
Oh, he played great. I mean, he ignored him as like a buddy, and he didn't want to be like, you know, hanging out, you know, chasing tail or anything with him when they weren't playing. But when he got on the field, he was the consummate professional.
So this is a thing that, and maybe this is what Bill saw too, in retrospect, looking back at it. Maybe Bill looked at the whole thing and said, well, you know what? There was that whole thing with Garoppolo when he got here, and there was that tension with Brady, and Edelman was obviously in Brady's hip pocket with that one and riding around as his little buddy. And then by the time 2016 rolled around and Brady decided he was going to serve his suspension and accept the penalty from the NFL with regard to the Deflategate nonsense, Edelman actually played quite well with Garoppolo in the first couple of games. Now, look, they were only together really for, you know, one full game and then call it a quarter and a half against Miami. But in his first two games that year, Edelman was targeted 17 times. He caught 14 passes. And in the Arizona game, which was his only full game with Jimmy Garoppolo at that time, seven targets, seven catches, 66 yards. He also had three rushing attempts in that game. But the point is, Edelman was every bit the weapon that he had been under Brady for the majority of his career, or certainly the last years of his Brady's career here. And the sign that he jumped right in and played with Garoppolo, I don't know, maybe Bill looked at that and said, hey, when it came time to play, the kid played. He played. And he put away the personal garbage, and he didn't hold anything against anybody because at the end of the day, Edelman's a professional. And I wonder if in this case, Bill sort of looked at the landscape and came to the same conclusion. Gronk, gone. They got a fourth-round pick for him. Brady left. Other guys have left, but he kept Edelman. And I think he believes that Edelman ultimately will be committed to the cause. And I think this is all a good sign as it pertains to Edelman. My big concern with Julian Edelman is whether or not he's got anything left in the tank. Edelman at the end of last year did not look like the same guy. Now, maybe it was a result of injury. Maybe he was banged up because they played so many games over a five-year period during which they went to four Super Bowls. They won three of them. A lot of those miles piled up. Maybe it's all related to that. I hope it is. Because in terms of the motivation, it feels like Edelman does have some of that. And that to me is a good sign. 617-779-0985. Jimmy, do we have any update from Gasper?
Yeah, he's close, but he sat through four green lights already.
Oh, okay, terrific. Well, we're hoping that Chris Gasper will join us in the next segment. If he doesn't, we will continue with your wonderful phone calls next.
Tugger and Mass. Sports. Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass.
Oh.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Let's bring Mike Reese into the conversation, Mike, because you had a piece on ESPN.com that suggested that looking ahead, the Patriots offense might actually be better without Tom Brady. What in the world does that mean?
Well, Greeny, you know, talking to people around the Patriots, there's an acknowledgement that it's going to be hard to match what they had at quarterback with Tom Brady, arguably, the greatest of all time. But the thought process is that if they can just get solid play at the quarterback position and then improve in several other areas, the totality of the offense could be more efficient. And here's something for you. Last year, Tom Brady led the NFL with 33 throwaways. Now, that's not all on Tom Brady, but a reflection that the overall offense didn't always get what it was hoping to out on the field. So they hope that it's going to be Jarrett Stidham. He's been leading some of these throwing sessions that some of the players on offense have had here outside of Boston, and it's an approach that's similar to really 2001 when Brady was a young quarterback taking over in New England.
Mike Reese on ESPN just a day ago. We spent a fair amount of time discussing that yesterday, but naturally, Chris Gasper, I almost set up the Globe. See that? See that, Jimmy Stewart? I almost said it. Chris Gasper of Channel 5 WCBB-TV in Boston. That one clearly went up his cavity. So before we get to Gasper, who's now in studio, I just need to tell you, Chris Gasper is powered by the commuter rail. Remember, if you're an essential worker, maybe a medical professional or a first responder, the MBTA is running additional commuter rail trains into Boston to help you arrive for your early morning shift and social distance while on board. Visit MBTA.com/coronavirus for schedules and more information. All right, Gasper, go.
Yeah, I just think when you look at this, and I'm not knocking the reporting on it because it clearly says that the Patriots believe this. But them putting this out there and people, nobody really seriously questioning it right away, to me, it's like, at this point, have the Patriots become like a cult? I mean, how could you look at this? You're basing the improvement on the offense and the idea that a quarterback who's never started a game and two rookie tight ends who have never played a game in the NFL are going to come in and immediately not only be starters, not only be average starters, but be proficient NFL starters, because that is what would have to happen for the offense to be better. What is the factual basis for this other than the Patriots saying they feel this way, which I would say is a bit of hubris? That sort of speaks to the coaching. Obviously, Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick feel like it doesn't matter who the quarterback is. It doesn't matter what the personnel is. They can coach anybody up. That's how they feel, and I get it. But to me, you have to seriously question that. Like, how are they going to be better on offense? Is it because David Andrews is back? Is it because Sony Michel is going to have a breakout year? You could have made that case until we found out today, Mike Reese, the first to have it, more great reporting from Mike, that Sony Michel underwent foot surgery and might start training camp on PUP. And it's not just this. It's like this sort of, look, there's no question the Patriots are the gold standard in the NFL. Nobody does more with less. I don't debate that. But when I hear somebody who has been in the league like Mike Tannenbaum and has competed against the Patriots also go out and say that they have the best running back group in the league.
Okay, but Chris.
Like,
Chris,
what are we basing these things on? Okay, other than who the coach is, who doesn't step on the field.
Okay, so let's stick to the first point. We'll get to the running back. We'll get to the running back thing later.
But they're all related, Maz. I mean, you can see that, right? That it's the two things are related.
Okay, but they're all sure they're related. Yeah, I agree that they're related. But I also think that they're separate topics. And when I say that separate topics, the quarterback play and the running back stable to me are different things. Do you think it is completely unrealistic that the Patriots offense could, quote unquote, function more efficiently this year than it did a year ago? Now, that doesn't mean better.
Okay.
And when I say better, I mean, doesn't mean they'll score more.
Okay.
But that they will play more together and do a better job of getting the most out of their ability. Do you think that that is possible?
Well, let me just say this. Bill Belichick always says the reason you put the offense on the field is to score points. So by definition, that is efficiency. So if you're asking me if they're going to sit around and sing Kumbaya or Jacoby Myers is going to feel more comfortable, maybe, but I don't care. Like, are they going to score more points? Are they going to be better in the red zone? Are they going to be an offense that's more feared by other teams? I don't think so. So, I mean, if people feel more comfortable and it's like a Kumbaya situation, that's great. But what does that have to do with scoring points and winning football games?
Okay, so let me ask you a question. In 2001, did they score a lot of points?
I don't even know what the points they scored were.
I'm
but
just
they
asking,
scored. They,
go they, by memory, Chris.
They
go
scored,
by memory.
I know they weren't a super prolific offense, but they scored when they had to score. Yes.
Were they efficient?
Again, I don't remember what the stats were. They scored when they had to score.
Go with your gut. What do you remember?
I don't know. Do you have the stats? I mean, are you just...
No, I'm just telling you that Brady didn't turn the ball over a lot when he get in there, right?
And he didn't turn the ball over a lot last year, but that wasn't enough.
No, but I'm not talking about Brady last year. I'm talking about Brady 2001 when he first got in the league.
Yeah.
And he was not the prolific player that he is now.
Yes.
Would you say that their offense, for what they had back then, was efficient?
I would say yes. They got the most out of the talent that they had. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And that would be my definition of it. They got the most out of what they had.
Okay, so is it unrealistic to think that something similar could happen here in 2020 if Jarrett Stidham's a quarterback?
Yes, it is, because Tom Brady couldn't get a lot out of these guys last year, and I don't think Jarrett Stidham's going to get anything more out of them that a veteran, all-time great Tom Brady couldn't get out of. That was the whole point of last season. Like, this is a franchise that always relied offensively on Brady to do more with less around him, and finally last year... Now, part of that could be the fact that he was in decline and not capable of carrying the offense. I acknowledge that. But unless you're telling me Stidham's going to come in and be Patrick Mahomes, who sat out a year, and then as soon as he came in was an MVP-caliber quarterback, if that's what you're basing this on, then I say, okay, that's based on your faith in Stidham. But haven't we sort of heard all throughout the offseason from multiple sources that they like Stidham, they like him a lot, and they want to see him, but they want to see what he can do? Or, you know, they need to see a little bit more. Like, I haven't heard, like, we think we have Patrick Mahomes 2.0. That's not what I've heard.
Because they don't.
You have Rob Ninkovich saying, like, oh, I think Hoyer's going to start. So, to me, that's the only way this offense is better and more efficient, is if it turns out that Stidham can get more out of the skill group than Brady can, and I just don't see how that happens.
Yeah, but Chris, I just think you're underestimating the absence of Brady's buy-in last year. I think you're
the guy stunk,
that.
Maz. I think you are totally overestimating what that means, and you are underestimating the lack of skill position talent that was around him. They had the fewest targets to tight ends in the NFL last year. They couldn't get the running game going. And I sent you guys the tweet. Evan Lazar had this. He went on NFL Next Gen Stats. Go back and look at what the separation was. They have a Next Gen Stat, yards of separation at time of throw. Out of 143 receivers who ran 100 routes last year, N'Keal Harry ranked 143 in separation. What is Tom Brady supposed to do about that?
No, I'm with you in that they blew, but considering the improvements that they've made, well, theoretically, that they drafted at tight end, and if it is Stidham, and I think that there's upside and potential there, I think from a continuity standpoint, it could. And you know me, I'm for the most part a Brady Bobo. Sure. I know you've kicked me out of that club, but that thing was like a car that barely could start last year, outside of a few games, like week one against Pittsburgh and maybe sure. that late Buffalo game. Other than that, it was just like sputtering time and time and time yeah. again. So it just... Are they going to put up the points that they put up last year? No, I'm with you on that. But I think, from a continuity standpoint, the ability to pick up third and got to have it third and seven, something like that, I think it could be better than last year.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, look, I know it probably sounds like I'm summarily dismissing it. I'm not. I haven't heard a valid reason given to me yet why I should believe it. I'm willing to believe it if you give me a valid reason. If you say, look, Stidham, you know, we like what we saw last year from Stidham. We think he's going to be really special. You know, we feel like he's going to be better than Jimmy Garoppolo, the way we felt about him. Or if it's like, hey, you know what? You know, N'Keal Harry, he was only 50% healthy last year, and we feel like if he's 100%, like he's a number one receiver. He's Larry Fitzgerald. Or it's like, hey, Sony Michel wasn't really that healthy last year. He didn't have his burst. We think he's a 1,200-yard back. I'm not hearing any of that. What I'm hearing is like, oh, okay, they're all going to feel better about each other. And like maybe Jacoby Myers won't be as scared. So that's going to translate to production on the field. If you can't create separation and you can't get open, like all of a sudden Stidham's going to throw him open when Tom Brady couldn't throw him open? That seems hard to believe to me.
Okay, but again, Chris, in some ways you're making it about Brady versus Stidham. And it's not just Brady versus Stidham. It's about the – now, look, I admit the injuries are a part of it too. I'll tell you, I feel a lot better if David Andrews is out there for 16 games or something close to it as opposed to zero. And I'll feel better about it if Cannon and Mason play better than they did a year ago if they get anything out of tight end at all. I thought their offensive line sucked last year. I just think that the idea, Chris, that Brady was committed to that receiving core, that he believed in it, is to me crazy. He didn't, and I think that affected them. Now, I'm not telling you anybody singing Kumbaya by a campfire or anything else of the like. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about not pouting and putting your head down and throwing your helmet every time somebody runs a wrong route. And I'm not telling you Stidham's better than Brady, because he's not. But what I do know is that Stidham's not experienced enough or accomplished enough to act like a brat when things go wrong. So right. he's not going to act that way.
But isn't
I just think okay. I just think they have a better chance of being on the same page than they did a year ago. Doesn't mean I'd rather have Jarrett Stidham than Tom Brady at quarterback, but they have a better chance of being on the same page, because the fact is Brady's wanted out of there for 2 years. 2 years. And I'm a big believer in state of mind affecting what your performance can do. And I don't know if you believe that or not, but Brady, to me, was half-checked out last year, Chris.
Yeah, I don't think he was half-checked out. I think he was very frustrated by the limitations of the people around him. And if there's one thing about Tom Brady, and we've talked about it here for years, you know, he had the reputation of elevating those around him, and he couldn't elevate that skill position group. And it seems like you're putting that more on him than the skill position group. I put it on the skill position group. And my skepticism on this is based on the fact that I don't see any tremendous or immediate upgrades to the skill position group. I mean, tell me where the upgrades are. I mean, yeah, is tight end an upgrade going from a negative 10 to like negative 2 or 0? Sure, that's an upgrade, but it's still not good enough. Like, I don't know. Maybe Devin Asiasi is Gronk. I don't know if he is or not. But it's like, oh, the tight ends are better. Yeah, of course they're better, because you're going from nothing to potentially something, but there's no guarantee that they're going to be really productive. Like, just show me where the upgrade at skill position is.
Yeah, I
just don't see it. I don't see it.
You're right. I don't put it all in the skill position group. I put some of it on Brady. Not all of it.
Yeah, and I just
some of it.
And I just think you put too much of it on Brady.
Put any of it on Brady?
I do. I put some of it on Brady because I think there was some decline, and he wasn't Superman who could carry those guys. But the reality is, like, you know, we've been through this before, like 2013, when you're throwing Josh Boyce and Kembrell Tompkins out there. And it was Aaron Dobson. Go look at the numbers from 2013 and look at what the numbers were for last year. When you go back in hindsight, didn't it turn out that none of those guys could play, Maz, and that was the issue? Because after that, Brady went on to win three more Super Bowls. So was the issue Brady in 2013, or was it that those guys just weren't good enough and he couldn't make them good enough?
Yeah, those guys weren't good enough. I also think that Brady tried a little more than he did last
year. But the numbers were exactly the same. That's my point to you.
Yeah, but
whether he tried more or not, the limitations weigh you down.
Yeah,
I just don't buy, like, I'll be honest with you, and I'm sorry to cut you off. I just really don't buy any of what you're selling on this idea of these guys were hampered to the degree of not being able to produce because the quarterback was you know, yelling at them.
Yeah, Chris, I don't care what the numbers were relative to 2013. Whether they were the same or not, I don't care. What I know is that in the second half of last year, their offense was ranked 21st in the league. And what I do know is that Brady's state of mind and his attitude sucked. And I think that did not help the offense. Okay, so the absence of that, I think, can help the offense because they're going to have a quarterback that I think is completely invested. Now, if he sucks, they're screwed. If the skill positions suck, they're probably screwed on offense.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's completely preposterous to think that there is a chance that it could all look better. That's all. That's my only point.
So let me ask you the flip side of this on Stidham. Okay, so he'll have a better attitude. And I'll agree with you on that. He'll have a better attitude. But physically, with receivers who can't create separation, do you think he'll be able to make the throws that Brady could make to guys who weren't creating separation, to throw guys open and to put the ball into spots?
No idea. I have no idea.
Just
probably
in his first year. Well, let me ask you, what do you think the likelihood of that is?
I think it's probably low. I don't think he's going to be able to make the same throws that Tom Brady made consistently at this stage of his career. I also don't think they're going to ask him to. So we'll see how it shakes out. But do I think the offense could work together better than it did a year ago? Yes, I do. I just, you know, again, it's a team sport. How many times did we get that shoved down our throat and all of a sudden one of the guys doesn't buy in and it happens to be the quarterback and it's not going to affect anything?
I don't know. I think about that game last year against Houston and I didn't see, and I'm not going to disagree with you. I'm not going to pretend that he didn't Dan Marino at times last year. He did. But I think about that game against Houston when he's on the sideline imploring the receivers to get open and saying, this is going to be a tough game. We have to be tougher. We have to create. I didn't see a guy who in that game was giving up on guys or was disengaged. I saw a guy who was begging guys to give him a little bit more, to give him a little bit more of a chance. That's what I saw. So I don't think that every game, every turn with these guys, he was writing them off. I think there were times he tried to inspire them. I think he was begging them to do something they were physically incapable of doing. And that's not their fault. And that's not Tom Brady's fault. That's the coach's fault.
Jimmy, how do you know when Chris Gasper has been sitting in traffic too long?
Because he continuously is the best hour in the show every week.
Gasper coming in a little hot.
I'm a little hot. I'm not going to lie. Good read, Mass. You're right.
Oh, God, please. I can tell. I hear it in your voice. I don't have to be there. I can see you're totally pissy today.
I am.
Good for the show. Disagreement. Think of that.
But that's okay. I don't mind it, Gasper.
Good.
Because deep down at your core, I know that you're a kind, generous human being.
Right back at
even
you.
Though, even though, if you're, frankly, even though if you're a pissy bitch today, that's okay. It happens from time to time. So Gasper's got other things he wants to get off his chest as it pertains to the running back core. He already alluded to that a little bit. We'll get to that. We'll get to your phone calls all after Matt McCarthy. Matt McCarthy, get you caught up on headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Mass. Way more than just a sports talk radio show.
This truly is the apocalypse.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
From the right hash, behind James Devlin, with Hogan left and Edelman right. Brady turns, gives to Michelle, runs up the middle, pushing the pile, driving his way into the end zone! Touchdown, Patriots!
Wow.
this kid has been special through two quarters. The extra surge, the leg turn. And this is what we thought the kid has. You know, the leg power. You saw it at Georgia. You saw it on the breakaway run earlier. But Gronkowski off the edge, he hits the backer, and it's James Devlin. He gets up behind, and then they just get beyond him and push him in. Third touchdown of the day, divisional round. We got to check. Mass is probably already called out for Monday. What a run. What a run by number 26.
He was good. He was good yesterday. Now, we had some fun last week with it, but, I mean, there were some holes you and I could have run through. All you had to do was, you heard Zoe there on the call, and thanks for the shot there, Zoe, during the broadcast.
Touchdown run there by Sony Michel. Sony Michel. That was from a couple of years ago. I don't remember him scoring a touchdown last year, frankly, because I thought he sucked so bad. But that is neither here nor there. In any case, Chris Casper, who is with us here for the next 45 minutes or so. Chris will be with us till 4:15. Chris Casper of Channel 5, fired up in the first segment, is also pissed off about assessments of the Patriots running back corps. What do you got, Chris?
Yeah, I just saw that again, you know, from Mike Tannenbaum, who had those comments to the other, you know, station across the street. And I was just sort of looking and saying, how can you say it's the best running back group? I think you could make a claim that it's the most versatile and varied. You know, it's sort of like a Swiss Army knife, right? You can peel off anything you need. I would buy that. And I think their running back corps is one of the strengths of the offense. But the best, to me, to have the best, you have to have an elite game-changing back that anchors your running back core. So
no,
maybe it's
count,
not.
You don't count Brandon Bolden?
Actually, Brandon Bolden's a great guy to talk. I'll never say a bad word about Brandon Bolden because he's one of the go-to guys in the locker room. But
Rex Burkhead,
yeah,
Michelle. I mean, these are just,
I mean,
guys.
I just think you have to have an elite guy. Now, maybe he knows something I don't, and Damian Harris is going to be that guy. And that would, again, that's why I thought the two things sort of tied together, Maz, because I'm saying, okay, if the offense is going to be better, I think for the offense to be better this year or more efficient or however you want to label it, they are going to have to run the football more and make people fear them running the football, which is sort of what happened towards the end of the year in 2018. But I also think that's harder to do without Tom Brady because every team that lined up to play Tom Brady over the last 10 years basically would dare the Patriots to run and say, well, if you can beat us that way, fine, but we're not letting this guy beat us. And so in order to help out Stidham, they need to get more out of these running backs. But the catch 22 is that I think everyone's going to know that. And they're going to say, no, 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 this kid, he has to beat us. And we're going to gear up for your running backs. But they don't have a Christian McCaffrey, a Saquon Barkley, an Ezekiel Elliott, a Nick Chubb, a guy who, when you gear up for him, is going to just make three guys miss and get the yards on his own. They don't have that.
Well, the other thing, too, and you always bring it up, which is annoying about the way that they deal with their running backs here, is that they kind of beat the ability out of them. They want them doing it one way, yeah. And if you try to go outside of the box a little bit, or if you try to flash a little bit and go east-west rather than north, you know, trying to head north, like, they don't want that, and then they'll sit your ass down. So that also plays into it. But that just, they don't have a guy. They don't have a Christian McCaffrey. They don't have a Nick Chubb or anyone like that that's going to be a game-breaker.
Yeah, and
I'll tell you what.
No, I was just going to say, just to expound upon that thing, Maz, that Jim was talking about, and their running game, Maz, they believe that really it's more important not to have negative plays. They would rather have you not make negative runs. If, let's say, you have three negative runs, and that means you're going to break a 75-yarder, they would rather have you just be consistent, steady, not have negative runs trying to break that eventual 75-yarder.
Oh, totally. Yeah, look, but what if you consistently suck? Like, that's sort of where I am. And I just thought Michelle was terrible last year. And look, again, I'll be honest with you. I think that had more to do with the line than it did anything else, just as Michelle's success the year before had more to do with the line than it did with Michelle. I just don't see anything unique in Michelle. I can rattle off probably 15 running backs who I think are better than Sony Michelle, maybe more, honestly, if I gave it any real thought. And so I know Mike Tannenbaum, this whole theory originated with Mike Tannenbaum, and he rattled off the Patriots running backs. Let me just give you the depth chart at running back quickly.
Yep.
Okay. Michelle, who, can we agree, is average, and a non-factor in the passing game. James White, we all love. Absolutely, I'll take James White any day of the
best,
week. But
best third down back in the league. In a
but
super
he's not
clutch,
a feature back.
Super
right?
clutch player.
You can't give him the ball 25 times a game, whether it be or 20 times
no,
a game.
No, you can't. And we saw last year, too, that when you don't have a lot of weapons in the passing game, all of a sudden he starts drawing corners and safeties, and it's a little harder for him to get open.
Rex Burkhead can't stay healthy, and Tannenbaum talked about Damian Harris like he was Franco Harris, for crying out loud. I liked what I saw of Harris in the preseason, but he didn't get on the field. So again, Chris, maybe he knows something we don't. The other guy's Brandon Bolden. Like, to me, Bedard said he thought the offensive line had the chance to be the best in the league. I'll agree with that take a million times before I agree with the running back one. That one's not even close. Steve is in a van. Steve, go.
Hey, what's going on, guys? A point that I keep, I keep talking with my friends about, but I'm not hearing anybody else say is, with the difference between Brady and Stidham is you can run a million option routes with Julian Edelman. With Stidham, they're going to make that playbook simpler. They're going to eliminate a lot of those option routes. They're going to dumb it down, which is going to make it a lot easier for guys like N'Keal Harry and, these younger receivers, even Damian Harris, to get on the field and be productive on the field. I'll hang up and let you guys listen.
I would sort of disagree with the assertion that will automatically, I think it will make it easier for them to understand the offense. I think it will make it easier for them to be on the field. But I don't think that automatically translates to productivity, and I'll tell you why. The Patriots didn't just make their offense complicated just to make it complicated and say, we're smarter than you. No, they built an offense that had an answer for every defense and could scheme people open. So if you strip that stuff away, now it's up to the individual guys to get open on their own based on their physical ability. And I'm not sure, and I don't think it's been proven yet, that those guys have the physical ability to get open on their own. So while it's simpler and they might know what route to run, it also might be simpler for the defense to defend. And now it's about your ability and not about Josh McDaniels scheming you open.
Okay, so Chris, hold on to that thought, because he did say something that I think you agree with. I think, but we'll find out. We'll ask Gasper whether or not that's true when we come back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
It's the show the crowd goes wild for.
Boo!
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Caller at the end of the last segment said something that I think even Chris Gasper would agree with, despite his pathological love for Tom Brady and everything Brady has accomplished over the course of his Patriots career. But first, we'll take a couple of calls, and I will, and then we'll get to that thought. Bob is in Wellesley. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, thanks. I'm a little bit more optimistic than you guys on the offense for next year. And the reason is I think they really missed Devlin. And during the draft, they pick up a tight end. And I wasn't excited about him as a tight end, but I look at him. He's the same size as Devlin. He's faster, and he has better hands. What do you think about how Keene might contribute?
So, Bob, before we let you go, where was Devlin's great value?
I thought that he was terrific around the goal line, and they used him to spring Michelle a lot. And okay.
So as a blocker?
Yes.
Okay, as a blocker. Chris, how much did they miss Devlin?
I think they missed him. I definitely think they missed him.
A lot or a little?
I think a fair amount.
I mean, I think they did, but here's what I would say, though, on that, and I have the utmost respect for James Devlin, but the Patriots built their entire dynasty on being able to overcome huge losses, right? I mean, they won a Super Bowl a year they didn't have Gronk. You know, they should have won a Super Bowl a year they didn't have Julian Edelman. So it's not disrespect to James Devlin in any way, but that hurt the offense, but to me, that wasn't the issue. Like, if they built an offense that couldn't overcome the loss of James Devlin, that says more about the offense than James Devlin, in my opinion.
Listen, Murray knows how I feel about this. The idea that James Devlin was the piece that took them down, if that's the case, you blow. Like your recipe for success or formula for success is that delicate that James Devlin going down is what'll take you apart? I mean, look, he's a nice little player. But at the end of the day, if that's what took you down, you're not very good. Mike's in Norfolk. Go ahead, Mike. Jimmy, Mike in Norfolk on line five. Is he there? No?
Mike, hey guys, you there? Sorry about that. Yep. So, Gasper, I was wondering, you kept on bringing up 2013. But
yes,
the big thing in 2013 for Brady that was different in 2014 was Garoppolo. So his mindset completely changed in 2014. He got red ass himself.
Well, they also got Brandon LaFell, and they upgraded the receiving core. They weren't quite as reliant upon those guys. And Danny Amendola understood the offense and got a lot better. And Gronk was healthy, so that made a difference. So, I mean, I would say I don't think it was just – I know everybody subscribes to sort of the theory of oh, yeah, you know, getting pushed by Garoppolo. And, look, I think that had something to do with it. But if you look at what was happening at that time and the stories that have come out – one of the reasons they drafted Garoppolo in 2014 was that there was some internal discussion about whether Brady was still as good. And I think we can all look back on it now and say it wasn't that Brady suddenly wasn't good anymore. It was that what was around him pulled him down in 2013. I don't think that's a radical opinion.
But, Chris, there were multiple factors. He also got goosed. He got goosed. And you yourself just said it. Garoppolo being drafted let Brady know that they were thinking about it, and he sharpened his focus and his commitment again. And he was able to last another six years. So, you know, now
do
again,
you think
you
he was? Do you think, Maz, though, like, you know, 2014, right, against the Seahawks, that fourth quarter, he's leading that comeback. Do you think
he's brilliant?
Do you think he's thinking about Jimmy Garoppolo?
No, but that's not the point. The point is that at the beginning of the year, from the outset, he was more focused and more motivated. And so, again, you got a sharper player all year long. I just think that, you know, to me, don't underestimate the importance of focus. It's critical for the success of any player. And when you're threatened, you tend to focus a little bit more. That's human nature. That's all of us. And so, but this brings me back to something the caller said a couple of segments ago, which I think you will agree with when it comes to Brady, and it's not necessarily a criticism of Brady, but it does speak to one of the fundamental flaws on the Patriots or in the Patriots last year, and we'll get to that right after McCarthy gets you caught up. No commercial breaks here. Top of the hour, and Gasper will be with us for a little bit more, and I'll ask him the question that a caller, I think, rightly asked two segments ago. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.